Hello, listeners. This is Talking Honor, the Pro Wrestling Torch podcast dedicated exclusively to Ring of Honor. You can catch us on the PW Torch livecast schedule every Tuesday, as you're probably doing right at this very moment. My name is Harley R. Padgett. I'm broadcasting live from my new studio apartment in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I'm joined this week, as always, by Pittsburgh's own Emily Fear.
Hello, everybody. I hope that many of you got up as early as I did this morning to watch the Best of Super Juniors final on New Japan Pro Wrestling.com.
Yes, if you did, congratulations and good on you, because we've both been up since, well before 6 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yes, yes. It's a very weird thing to wake up and start the day with Minoru Suzuki, but I can't think of any other better way to start a Monday.
Put in the M in Monday.
Yeah.
Best of Super Juniors. How long has this been going on now? A couple of weeks, right?
Couple of weeks. So it's a round robin tournament with two blocks. We have A block and B block. And so on Sunday, the block finals happened. And so that was Sunday night in Japan. And then Monday night in Japan, which translates to Eastern time, around 5:30 in the morning, we had the finals. And that was the that featured the last singles match of the tournament. Between Ishimori, who is the new Bone Soldier of the Bullet Club, versus Hiromu Takahashi of LIJ, Naito's faction. So for those of you who didn't get up early to see it, I highly recommend catching up on that match, checking out some of the tag matches that happened at the final, because we got to see a lot of really great action. We got a Kata appearance. We got some returning members of the Best of Super Juniors contenders, competing in several of the tag matches. I definitely recommend checking out many of the matches throughout the week. Our ROH guys included Marty Scurll, Flip Gordon, and Chris Sabin, and a couple of other guys who are not ROH specific, but you definitely see them on tours and appearances. So Scurll was actually one of the top contenders as of the block finals on Sunday. He did really well after kind of a rough start. He lost his first match to Hiromu Takahashi, but kind of regained some momentum into the block finals on Sunday, where he finished out with about a total of, I actually can't remember. I think it was about 8 points. Sabin did all right, too. He had 6, and Flip did 6 as well. And for an extra treat for myself, for a Motor City Machine Guns fan like myself, Chris Sabin got to sit in on commentary for the finals today. So that was extra special. But yeah, if you haven't checked out Best of Super Juniors 25 through New Japan Pro Wrestling, highly recommended. It's some of the best junior heavyweight wrestling you will see in the world. The matches were so spectacular that it was starting to get kind of mundane how great they were. So highly recommend checking that out.
So what does the winner get? They get a title shot?
They get a title shot.
Yes. Will Ospreay's heavyweight title?
Yes. So how it will work is at Dominion on June 9th, which is this coming Saturday, the winner of the Best of Super Juniors tournament, the winner being, if it's okay for me to spoil at this point, if you are following, by the time you hear this, this will be well spoiled.
Oh, yeah. It was like a day and a half ago by this point.
Yeah, so Hiromu Takahashi, who is the winner of this year's Best of Super Juniors, much to my glee, and for those of you who've seen him on the War of the Worlds tour and other ROH specials, he really brought it in this tournament. He was actually the underdog going into the final. People had
Cat.
Under Cat. He had Ishimori definitely had the was the general pick to win based on a lot of just theories about how it was going to go down in Dominion. But Takahashi pulled it out and he is the winner. So he will get a title shot for the junior heavyweight title at Dominion against Will Ospreay. That's this Saturday. And of course, that'll be in a very packed show featuring the ultimate, the Okada Omega Showdown number 4. Which is a 2 out of 3 falls match, no time limit. So that match could start on Saturday and end on Monday. We have no idea.
Yes, by the time we record next week's episode, they'll still be fighting. They'll take it.
Yes.
They took a 1 hour rest to recharge, drink some protein shakes, and then back in the ring. Ring the bell.
Yeah, pretty much. So looking forward to that, like 48 hours of nonstop wrestling.
Cool. So next week you'll have any... Are there any other ROH talent signed for Dominion at this point?
Trying to think. No, not off the top of my head. I mean, obviously... Well, yes, the Bucks. The Young Bucks will be going up against Evil and Sonata for the heavyweight tag team titles. So that's already booked. There's a lot of matches on Dominion that actually haven't been announced yet. We'll probably be seeing those fill in the next couple of days. So, but the big things are Okada versus Omega, Young Bucks versus Evil and Sonata, and we'll see the junior heavyweight title match.
Oh, and Chris Jericho for general wrestling fans. Not ROH relevant, but everybody knows and loves Chris Jericho.
Absolutely. Naito versus Jericho. It's been a fun little rivalry to see heat up. Jericho's been doing some fun little promo stuff, which Naito's been shrugging off in his typical style. So it'll be cool to see what happens on Saturday.
So Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada could walk away with two of the top New Japan titles this weekend.
That is true.
Wow. That'll make up for hockey. So, other news, I guess, coming out of this week, not New Japan related, but ROH related. Women of Honor star Deonna Purrazzo has officially signed with NXT. Kind of a surprise, I guess. It's hard. She's made appearances for NXT in the past. I've been watching NXT since day one. I'm a diehard. I keep statistics and everything. So she's wrestled at least six singles matches for NXT over the past couple of years. But always in an enhancement role. It was always her helping people like Asuka, people like Sasha Banks and Charlotte Flair look good, which makes sense. A lot of people do fulfill that role. A lot of people from the indies will be brought in to the bigger companies because they know someone like Deonna can make the talent they're trying to elevate look great. And she had been picked up as an alternate for last year's Mae Young Classic, the all-female tournament that WWE did. She was on the short list of people who would have been called up to participate in the tournament if somebody else got injured. That didn't happen. She didn't appear. So at the time, those two connections made me think that maybe NXT is in her future down the line, but I didn't think it was going to be arguably this soon or this early.
Yeah, I had a hunch this was coming based on a lot of what you've just said and the fact that I understand I'm not going to talk smack against NXT too much here, especially since it's a property that I don't actively watch that much. But I will say that NXT has become this kind of reaping ground for top talent from the indie feds. And so seeing how ROH has been building their Women of Honor program, seeing that they are now giving them spots on a, you know, at least semi-weekly basis, as far as matches go, introducing a title, I felt like it wasn't long before NXT made a big move towards grabbing some of the top Women of Honor talent. And Deonna is absolutely of the upper tier of talent in the Women of Honor Women of Honor program. So, yeah.
I think it was a calculated poaching by WWE to hurt Women of Honor?
I don't know that they consider it a calculated poaching so much as just taking top talent when it's becoming even more top, if that makes any sense. So I don't know that it's like, they're not threatened by Ring of Honor or Women of Honor, certainly, but they recognize when a program has gained enough steam to highlight talent in a way that's even a higher profile than it was before. So Deonna was getting that. She was getting that push within Women of Honor. She was getting that higher profile because Women of Honor in general has a higher profile. It wasn't going to be long before WWE snapped up a person that they already had an interest in.
Yeah, see, I think it's definitely a combination of the two. Obviously, you know, we love Deonna. We think she's a terrific talent. She's only 23 or something ridiculously young, so huge future ahead of her. And she's a perfect fit for NXT. WWE in general, even with all the progress they've made with the women's division and with how they profile women in the company, still very much a looks-based company. You have to have a certain aesthetic to be signed by WWE. And so if they were to sign anyone from Women of Honor, I guess Deonna would have been the most logical sense. Kelly's a little bit thicker than WWE tends to prefer the women, or Vince McMahon prefers their women. Shima Sakai is obviously much too old. Karen Q, same issue as Kelly Klein, arguably. Tennille Dashwood, they just fired, so they're not re-signing her yet, maybe in a couple years. So I can see why they signed Deonna in that sense. As to the whole poaching situation, there have been reports that WWE is literally, I don't know if they're trying to drive everybody else out of business or if they're afraid of the monopoly, but they've been signing up so much talent that they just don't have, they have so much talent they don't know what to do with it anymore. There's no room for all these people on the roster. And they've been doing this in England a lot. As there's talk of them starting their own UK division or their own UK show. And there have been reports coming out that they've been contacting contracted talent, people who are signed with Progress Wrestling and other companies, and trying to get them to sign exclusively with WWE.
Yeah, I want to talk about this for a second because I think it's important to recognize there's been a revolution in independent wrestling, and nothing has more legitimized that revolution than the success of All In and the continued success of people who, guys like Cody and the Young Bucks and those who have made really successful, really lucrative careers outside of the WWE machine. But this just does not necessarily apply to women's wrestling. There's a lot of great indie feds that have women's wrestling, and obviously there's great like women's specific, like women's only wrestling, like in Japan and even in states and in other countries. But if you want to be top tier talent and you want to make top tier dollars, if you want to get as famous as you could possibly make as a women's wrestler, the best option, the only real option for you is to go to WWE. And it's a market, it's a cornering of the market of women's wrestling that allows them to just reap in so much of the top women's talent and then either not use them effectively or barely use them or not know what to do with them because they have too much. But they're signing like crazy because even their lower end offers can beat often what these women are making at the top of their game.
That's the thing. I saw, not vitriol, but I saw some people upset when it was announced that Io Shirai had signed with NXT. People were, I don't know, it wasn't all directed at her, but some people were just upset in general, like, oh, great, she's signing with NXT now too. But for any of these women, it's, what can you expect? You know, being a contracted enhancement talent for NXT, never wrestling on television and only on house shows, you're still almost guaranteed to make more money than you would being one of the top stars in Women of Honor or Shimmer or Shine or probably even Impact Wrestling, just because, I mean, WWE just got a $2 billion contract for their number two show, right? Like, they've got insane amounts of money.
Yeah. I posted this on the day that it got announced that Deonna had signed with WWE, but, you know, I'm happy for these women wrestlers to like achieve this level of success. And I really hope the best because, you know, what can so often happen is that they get signed to WWE and then you watch that company misuse them or misunderstand their talents or put them in storylines or fail to use them effectively at all. I really hope that doesn't happen to Deonna. I have the best faith that it possibly won't. So I'm not unhappy for her. I'm very happy, obviously, for any wrestler that I follow. I am happy for them to get paid more and to get more attention and to garner like bigger heights of fame. I'm bummed for Women of Honor. I'm bummed for the continued meaning of what this is for, what this ends up meaning for independent federations like Ring of Honor, but like even smaller feds and women's only feds and. Because WWE has such a corner on the marketplace on this, it just ensures that if you become attached, if anyone really goes over as far as women's talent in these leagues, they're going to get snapped up sooner rather than later.
the good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Mundo goes to leave, and Taya says, "Wait, aren't you going to put any pants on?" He just goes, "No time for pants," and he walks off. That also happens to be Randy Orton's philosophy in life. My philosophy, too. See, you don't know if I'm wearing pants right now or not, do you? You can't see. I could be wearing nothing right now, for all you know. No time for pants.
Since 2007, The Sala Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
But I will say, it doesn't... We haven't seen the well go dry yet.
No, right? No.
NXT signed, picked up AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish, Donovan Dijak, Leo Rush, Cedric Alexander, and ROH is still going strong. They brought in new talent. They found new people to elevate. And, I feel like ROH could, next month, pick up Dalton Castle and Kelly Klein and Coast to Coast. And ROH would still survive. They'd find some new people who are out there somewhere else, and they'd bring them in, and they'd create some new stars or build some new people up. And I don't know. I think, and it goes full circle too, because you, not as often, but we see people like Cody and Adrian Neville saying that they're tired of being misused by WWE, and they leave to come back to the Indies. That's what happened with Sami Callihan, and he's arguably flourishing now in Impact.
Yeah. It's just, we keep talking about male wrestlers, and it's different for women's wrestling. It's different with Women of Honor versus ROH. They are still in such a fragile state of, like, really just getting Women of Honor where it needs to be talent-wise, that losing someone of Deonna's caliber is a huge blow. We're not talking, there's no talent in Women of Honor. There's a ton, but some of it still needs to be developed. There's a lot of, like, mid-card type players who are going to need another, you know, another several months to a year to really get going. And there's some women in that, in Women of Honor, that are, you know, really doing well, and they're only going to get better. But losing someone like Deonna, we can't pretend that that's not a huge loss. There's a deficit there, and there's not an immediate person to step into that role, to step into that gap.
Yeah, I guess our hope would be that, you know, they're a business, so the money that they were paying to Deonna, they'll use to go out and find somebody of her caliber to try to fill that vacancy, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Tennille Dashwood is, arguably similar in terms of ability and babyface charisma, connection with the crowd, etc.
Yes. She hasn't connected like Deonna has.
Yeah, but I mean, maybe with Deonna out of the picture, that's a chance for her to really grow even more, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I have faith in what they can do with Tennille. I have faith in what they can do with a ton of the women's talent. It's no disrespect to the women still in Women of Honor, to everyone behind it, but it's just, it's not, you know, it's not easy to lose someone like Deonna from a situation like Women of Honor, where we really are just getting, like, really just getting going. Like, they have just made it to the TV show. Like, they've just had, like, their first title run. Like, getting Deonna at this point in time is setting us back a little bit. It's setting Women of Honor back a step.
I don't disagree there. But, well, I guess this is our first episode of June 2018. So maybe we'll come back to this on first episode of July or August and see where Women of Honor stands after Deonna has left. Because we don't know, there's been no official date announced as to her last ROH appearance or when she reports to the NXT Performance Center in Orlando. Next week is the big finale to her feud with Kelly Klein. And after that, I don't know. She's not announced for either of the Texas shows coming up in a couple weeks, although a fair number of women are. So next week might wind up being her last appearance.
Yeah. And also they're going to have to ask what happens to her spot in All In. Like, is it vacant now? Do they have to fill someone in?
True. And Yeah, what does it mean for, well, I guess, I was going to say, what does it mean for her romantic relationship with Marty Scurll? But Zack Ryder's WWE, Chelsea Green is on the indies, and they make it work. So I guess these things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Adam Cole is on NXT, and Britt Baker's indie. Like, yeah, it's that doesn't really, I don't think that's a problem.
How does this ramping up the timeline of Marty Scurll signing with NXT? Because we know that's happening someday.
Well, I mean, you saw the when Johnny Gargano went to NXT and then Candice LeRae went to NXT. Like, when there's a connection there, that's the likelihood does increase. It makes a lot of sense.
Especially if they're both great wrestlers and really popular with the fans.
Marty is so over. I can't believe he's not fending off a ton of offers.
Yeah, I don't pay attention to contract details, so I don't know how long he's signed with ROH for. I know the Young Bucks, I think, their current contract runs up in December. But I can't. I want to say I can't see them going to WWE.
I can see anything right happening because
someday. I don't think right now. I don't know. Time will.
Yeah. I don't want to get too comfortable with the idea that they just won't. We all have to be a little realistic and remember that, like, you know, especially with the latest deals that WWE has made and all the money that's coming in from it and all the, like, the higher profile because it'll be on broadcast television. At this point, it's come December, come when these contracts come up for many of these guys. I'm not going to make any bets for it because I don't want to be disappointed.
Yes, I think the last thing Matt and Nick said when kind of asked about it in an interview is the big thing for them is just the creative freedom that they have right now. Because they're doing comfortably money-wise. They'd make more from WWE, sure. But they're not struggling by any means right now. And they have total creative freedom to perform where they want, to design their own merch, to do being the elite, things like that. And they, you know, they got buddies within WWE, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, who can tell them about, like, what it's really like working there.
Yeah.
And I think that would be the big deal breaker for them.
I'm hoping that the lure of maintaining your creative autonomy is going to be too much for them to overcome, because right now they have so many products that are their own. They have Being the Elite, they have All In, they have things that belong to them. And that goes away the minute they sign with WWE. The minute they sign with WWE, everything belongs to the company. And right now they don't have to do that. What they make belongs to them.
Yeah, I don't think they retire without a WrestleMania match. I think that's on their bucket list. You know, they grew up worshiping Hogan and Shawn Michaels and guys like that. Barring, you know, one of them gets like a crazy injury next week and is all of a sudden forced into a sudden retirement that nobody expected. Barring something extreme like that, I think they definitely wrestle at least one WrestleMania match in their lifetimes, but not in the next couple of years. I want to say not while Vince McMahon is in charge. Maybe once Vince retires or kicks it and Triple H takes over, because that is going to be a huge, huge game changer for all of wrestling, the day that Triple H takes over WWE. Anyway, we should talk about this week's ROH, because we're already 28 minutes into the podcast. And this was another episode of Ring of Honor Television. This was our 350th episode, actually.
Wow.
So, yeah, ROH started in 2002 with a series of live events, which will hopefully be coming to Honor Club in the very near future, they've said. And eventually, I think it was a couple years into their existence, that they got their first television contract. It was with HDNet. They did a weekly TV show, and they did 100 episodes of ROH television on HDNet before that came to an end. Again, a little bit of a break in between, and then the new current ROH television show debuted for the Sinclair Broadcasting Group on September 24th, 2011. So almost 7 years, 6 years and a bit, we've been doing this. I want to say I've been watching this show since that first episode in 2011. I remember hearing, I don't know, it feels like so long ago. Where were you 6.5 years ago?
6.5 years ago. I literally just looked at the date. All of 2011. I would have been in grad school, just because, like getting my degree. So yeah. And it's funny, I was actually just having a conversation with someone last week, a listener of our spinoff podcast, Elite Repeat, talking about, you know, getting into ROH when they were younger and realizing that the person I was talking to is much younger than me, because at the age that they were referring to, ROH didn't exist. Like, it wasn't around whenever I was that age. So for me, coming to ROH in recent months has meant like really diving back into a history that is not actually all that foreign to me, because it's fairly in my adulthood.
Yeah. So we were both, I guess, 17 when ROH debuted back in 2002. Mm-hmm. And I certainly didn't know about it at the time. I didn't know any indies at the time. You know, I watched WWE and that was about it. And
yeah,
so I don't know how or when ROH entered my radar or how I heard about it. It honestly might have even just been a simple case of that September 2011 flipping through the dial and being like, oh, there's a new wrestling show debuting this week. That's cool. I'll watch wrestling. I've never heard of this company or whatever. It might have been something like that, in all honesty. Or maybe, you know, I'm sure I was reading the internet. I was reading the Pro Wrestling Torch at the time. I'd probably heard of ROH through Daniel Bryan and CM Punk and guys like that, and was curious about it.
Yeah, I think I heard about it years and years ago. I mean, you mentioned 2011. I think my partner, my husband, who like has gotten me really into the wrestling the last 6 months, when we first started seeing each other, I think he had mentioned stuff about, you know, Samoa Joe and some of the guys who were really big in ROH at that time. So that would have been like 2010, 2011. And I think we found stuff online, like we found a couple of clips. And for whatever reason, it didn't take then, because neither of us really went all the way in. But he still had his attention on what was going on in wrestling, specifically with what was happening on the independent circuit. So he was the first one to tell me about Ring of Honor.
Well, there you go. So September 2011 was when ROH debuted for the Sinclair Broadcasting Group. This week's episode was episode 350. That first main event, way back September 24th, 2011, was also a title match. It was the ROH World Tag Team Championship on the line. Wrestling's greatest tag team, Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin, defended the titles successfully against the Kings of Wrestling, who these days you would better know as Cesaro and Cassius Ohno.
Oh, wow.
So that was way back in the day, and now here we are, 6.5 years later, and it's our 350th episode, and how fitting for the 350th television episode to have the television title defended in the main event.
That's right. We've been waiting for this.
And defended against somebody, against like an ROH veteran who was around. I don't know if he was around in 2011 because he's gone back and forth with TNA, but Aries was definitely around back in the day.
Yeah. And how long has it been since he's like had a match in ROH?
Not that long, maybe 3 years. He made a one-off appearance, I want to say 3 years ago, came back and did like a six-man tag or a six-pack challenge at some sort of pay-per-view.
Oh, okay. It's been a while since he's had like a singles match, though, like a title match.
Yeah, he was in ROH from 2004 to 2007, then left for TNA for a couple years, came back to ROH 2007 to 2010, left again in 2010 for Dragon Gate, TNA, and then made a one-off appearance in 2015 for ROH. So, yeah, he wasn't around at the start of the TV show era. He had left just before then, around 2010, so about a year before this TV series launched. But, yeah, okay, I'll start with the things I liked about this match, Silas Young and Austin Aries for the television title. The tail of the tape I thought was really interesting. Both from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Exact same height. Aries started his career in 2000. Silas in 2002. Silas is 15 pounds heavier than Aries, but otherwise very, very similar to each other. And Rick Abani and Cabana kind of mentioned that on commentary during the match. They tried to sell this match as they're mirror images of each other. They're, you know, they're going back and forth. They're evenly matched. It kind of felt like how they were felt like they were trying to make this into like Jericho versus Omega.
Yeah, I could see that. They have similar in-ring styles as far as fighting goes. I think Aries is maybe slightly more flashy than Young is, especially since, you know, Silas always kind of has a basic moveset that he like pulls from very effectively. But yeah, they were really playing up the angle of like, there's a super well matched, super even match, which is interesting when you think about like the kind of like the fall apart at the end.
Wrestling fans, if you're looking for a unique and entertaining way to get your wrestling podcast fix, check out Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio uses its trademark brand of banter to cover all professional wrestling you love, including WWE, NXT, New Japan, Lucha Underground, ROH, Impact Wrestling, and more. We also hold sit-down interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of the business, such as Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Chris Jericho, Kurt Angle, Trish Stratus, AJ Styles, and Roman Reigns. For those of you who want their wrestling with a perfect mix of serious analysis and comic relief, find Ring Rust Radio dropping every Wednesday night on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, so that was the thing, is they were trying to sell, I think they really wanted this to be this huge match, this like pay-per-view match between, I mean, and it makes sense. You got Silas Young, he's holding arguably the number three title in Ring of Honor at the moment. You have Austin Aries, currently champion in many different companies, but at the time of this taping and as of today, June 5th, 2018, he is the Impact World Champion, top champion in the number three American wrestling promotion. So these two guys going at it in the main event of this show, you want it to be a huge deal. You want it to feel like this big thing. And then now Ian and Colt were trying their hardest to tell that story. But for me, three commercial breaks in one match, I think that's what really, what hurt it for me.
Yeah, me too. Me too. There was a lot of momentum lost because of those commercial breaks. One of those things where you really kind of wish this was a pay-per-view match and you weren't like having to sit through the commercial to like get into the action. That hurts. That hurts different matches differently, right? Like nobody likes a commercial break in the middle of the action. But sometimes matches are paced in a way that like there is a natural place to cut. You're pretty good about that too. But this one was definitely not, like definitely could have used a better flow as far as less break, more like direct in the action, because every time it got going, you would end up with having to go to a commercial break. There were a couple of really great sequences. I thought there was a really fantastic one where Silas had Aries in a full Nelson, and then Aries was able to like basically like spin Silas out of the ring, like spin out of it and Silas out of the ring. Following with a neck breaker and then a drop on him, a flying drop kick on the apron, like this, some really good dynamic sequences, a couple of good bumps. But yeah, just kind of not the pace that you'd want to see in something that had so much hype to it. I think I was pretty locked in for it, but I definitely felt a loss of momentum towards the end.
Yeah, and it would have been nice. I think it would have felt like a bigger deal too if we had heard from Aries more recently. He made his first pitch when he returned, which was what, a month or two ago now. At this point, probably at least 2 months, that because Kenny King was still champion at the time. He made a surprise appearance at the ROH Live event and said I was a two-time ROH World Champion, former Tag Champion with Roderick Strong. I never held a TV title, and I want it. And then we hadn't really heard from him since. Silas got a promo last week. He got a promo at the start of this show. But it felt one-sided in that respect. Like, I had no doubt that Austin Aries wasn't winning the title here. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I feel you on that. I think you're right. I think even at least one promo between when we saw him at Supercard and now would have been nice. There really hasn't been much. So I found myself even being like, oh yeah, that's what Austin Aries looks like. Not because, you know, I can't look him up. I can look him up, but you know, there's something about having promos throughout like a buildup of a match that keeps a person present in your mind in a way that Aries wasn't really present in mind when this match started. And I think that did kind of kind of hurt the intensity of it from the get-go. Like, you want to know who's in the ring. And I even found myself just being like, oh, yeah, that's, I forgot that that's what Aries looks like. Okay, cool. Yeah, he's got his belts. All right.
Yeah, I mean, one sort of face-to-face between the two of them even would have gone a huge way. I mean, look at the Cody and Nick Aldis segment last week.
Yes.
At the live event. That made a huge difference to their match for All In. I understand with Aries being with Impact Wrestling, probably not a lot of availability to come and shoot, like be at the TV tapings or shoot a face-to-face in the ring with Silas where they can play off each other and really set up their personalities. I understand that, but you know, they could have had him film a selfie video with his cell phone and send it in and they air that on the show or something from him.
I mentioned earlier that Jericho is going into this rivalry with Naito, is going into this match against Naito at Dominion, and you know, Jericho's probably all over, like, you know, completely across the country, but he's, you know, making videos on his phone and submitting them as promos. I mean, you've got to do something. You have to, and I understand that with ROH, there's a certain like brand level that I think that they, you know, don't just want like randomly shot promos on someone's phone. But, you know, that would be better than not having anything at all.
What if Impact has obviously given Aries permission to come and compete with these other companies, compete on ROH television, right? What if Aries had sent in like a selfie video shot on his phone, but shot from him standing in the Impact ring? In the Impact Arena. Something like that would have been so cool and really sets us up as, wow, two like top stars from two different promotions. Instead, Aries walked out. He was wearing two titles. He was holding a third. The announcers didn't say what titles these were. They didn't say like, oh, he's the Impact World Champion and the Defy Wrestling World Champion. They just said, oh, it's the belt collector, Austin Aries.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, right? Like, why are we pretending that Impact doesn't exist? Or at least we're not, like, saying the name.
Yeah, like, they're being nice enough to let him wrestle on your show. It seems like the least you can do is to acknowledge, hey, this guy's... And doesn't it make Silas look even better then? Silas Young hung in the ring for 20 minutes with the top number one guy in this other company. That's kind of a big deal, right?
Yeah.
If Silas Young showed up on NXT next week and had a competitive 20-minute match with Aleister Black, probably be a big deal for Silas. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the framing of this, they wanted it to seem like this big, huge, epic encounter. I came away feeling like it was a good match. I won't say an okay. It was a good match up until the shenanigans.
Yes, let's talk shenanigans.
Okay. This is the other... What did you think was going to be the outcome at the start of this episode?
Okay. So I was pretty sure before this episode, probably before Sunday when I watched it, that Silas would just retain the belt. Then, before the episode aired, I got suddenly convinced Austin Aries was going to get it. I was like, okay, so this is what they're going to do. They're going to give Austin Aries, he's going to get it. He's going to get the belt, and then this will be the match that happens at Best in the World, and they'll have a rematch, and either Austin can retain it, or Silas will get it back. Probably Silas will get it back. And then, just as the match starts, my partner said, I bet there's something that happens at the end. I bet that there's like some kind of shenanigans at the end. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, some kind of weird finish. I wouldn't be surprised. And then halfway through, he called what was going to happen. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened.
See, I figured with Aries being a champion in Impact at the moment, he wasn't going to win. He wasn't going to lose clean. There's no way Silas was going to pin the Impact World Champion, hit misery, 1-2-3, that clean finish. My best guess, you know, I kind of thought, hey, Silas will just, you know, take the low blow. Silas will, like, kick. We talked about this on last week's podcast. ROH has been going low blow crazy lately. So I honestly thought it was going to be a matter of Aries goes for something, Silas just kicks him between the legs. Ding, ding, ding. Aries wins, Silas retains. But they ramped it up. We got more shenanigans than that. We got two title belts being brought into the ring. We got Beer City Bruiser. Oh, we got a ref bump first.
Mm-hmm.
We got Beer City Bruiser running down the ringside. Kenny King running right behind him, stopping him from getting in the ring. That was a nice change of pace, I think.
Yes, I really was glad that that happened. I was really glad that there was a stop. I thought maybe it would stop there, that there'd be some fighting ringside between Beer City Bruiser and Kenny King. But it did not stop there. It was like shenanigans upon shenanigans upon shenanigans.
Yes. Yeah, see, I liked that Bruiser never even got in the ring once all show. Because that's a nice change of pace. Presumably, you know, most of the locker room were backstage watching the match because, hey, it's two of the top guys in wrestling competing for a title. So everybody's watching this match. And Bruiser saw Young in trouble, hit the ring, and the second Bruiser ran out of the ring, Kenny King went, no, and ran right after him, stopping him. So that's a nice change of pace. But then, so Kenny takes out Bruiser, Silas gets the title again. He wants to hit Austin with the title. Kenny jumps in the ring, steals the belt. And then Kenny Hicks hits Silas with the title. That's kind of iffy. That's like, I know you're trying to be like, well, it's good for the goose, is good for the gander. But Kenny's supposed to be a babyface.
Yeah.
Aries is like shades of gray at this point. He's a clear heel in Impact. Going into this match, he was portrayed as babyface. But Kenny's the good guy. Kenny's supposed to steal the title back from Silas, bounce, and then Silas turns around and walks into a brainbuster, and 1, 2, 3, the villain gets his comeuppance.
Yeah, they couldn't do that. They couldn't execute that exactly because they need... I guess we have to like jump to like what happens before we can really talk about the motivations for having King do something like this, because that was frustrating to me after watching it. I was kind of swept up in it when it was happening. I'm like, oh, cool, interesting. But, you know, backing away from it, it's like, how does this make sense for a face? Like, how does this make sense for a baby face to be making that action? It's much more within type to grab the belt and leave the ring. So I think we have to address like what ended up happening so that we can like kind of walk back from there, because I think that they're setting up something specific for Best of the World. And I think that's why they did it this way.
Well, so when Kenny showed up, I thought, well, this is interesting. Is he like starting a feud with Beer City Bruiser? But Ian and Colt were automatically, oh no, Kenny is good friends with Austin Aries. They go way back. That's why he's out here. I didn't know that. You know, I had to look it up. I've been watching ROH for 7 years now, and I had to look up, oh, it was in 2010, Austin Aries was injured for a period, and so he managed the All Night Express, Kenny King and Rhett Titus. So they go back, yes, they go back a ways. But how many viewers knew that? How many viewers watching were like, oh, it's Austin Aries' good friend, Kenny King?
Well, I knew because of Supercard.
When Aries showed up with his promo saying he wanted the title.
Yeah, and so Aries was there, and they talked to Aries about his relationship with Kenny King, and like that's why Austin had kind of stepped in after, you know, all the stuff that happened with Silas and Kenny's match, and you know, Kenny being zip tied and beat down and everything. That's why Austin intervened. That got talked about at Supercard, but if you hadn't watched that specific thing, then yeah, you wouldn't really know.
Well, and I had watched that, and I don't remember that.
Well, exactly, right?
But something. That's why, yeah, a promo beforehand, from before the match with Aries, talking about how I wanted to face Kenny King because he's a good friend of mine and I respect him. Silas Young won the title, I guess I'm going to have to beat you instead, or something like that.
Yeah.
Or even a video package replaying Aries' appearance from Supercard of Honor, because it's been, it feels like it's been a long time, and I clearly don't remember it.
Yeah, something small to have refreshed that story. Even, you know, it would have been cool to even have, heck, you could have had Kenny cut a promo in favor of Austin Aries. Just something that would have made that story a little bit better, because they're relying on it now where it's going, and it's, you know, it's supposed to be important. And I think a lot of viewers were probably forgetting that information, and that kind of takes the air out of this story, out of this, you know, developing story.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
Yeah, so King hits Silas with the title belt, the television title, jumps out of the ring. The referee, I think it was Paul Turner, recovers. He counts 1, 2, 3. Austin Aries is the new television champion. The fans throw the streamers. Ian and Colt are so giddy on commentary. There's a title change. Austin won the title that has eluded him for his 6 years in ROH previously. This is big deal. This is da-da-da. And then senior referee Todd Sinclair, as he was identified, came down to ringside to consult with Paul Turner. I did like, again, I love Ian and Colt, and I love the little things that they do. So as soon as Todd Sinclair came out and started talking to the other referee, Cabana stepped in and said, oh, he's probably checking on him to make sure he's okay, because he got kicked in the head by accident when Saz was trying to do misery. He's probably just checking on him. But no, he was telling him, I watched this whole thing from backstage, and, you know, I saw Beer City Bruiser come out, I saw Kenny King come out, and the only thing that matters, apparently, is King hit Silas with the title, so therefore Silas wins. And that was the official ruling.
But it doesn't end there, right? Like, there's a little bit more that happens after that. And that's what I think is being, like, the setup for Best in the World. So after that happens, they give the title back to Silas. Silas, you know, scurries off with it, you know, not a particularly typical Silas way, but he, you know, takes his title and leaves. There is a altercation between, well, there's, I don't know, how would you describe it, Harley? What happens between Kenny and Austin?
Well, this is ROH, so we get a low blow, first and foremost. We get two low blows this week, if you're keeping track on our counter. First, Austin Aries kicks senior referee Todd Sinclair right in the ding-dings. Sinclair goes down, and immediately Ian and Colt turn on Austin. They've been championing him all night about how it's so cool to see him back in ROH. He's a respected veteran. He was here back in the day. Instantly, they turn on him. It's not Sinclair's fault you lost. That's a cowardly, despicable thing to do, to just, like, take a cheap shot at a referee for no reason. And then Kenny's trying to talk him down. He's trying to tell Austin, calm down. Look, you still got three title belts. We're still buddies. Hug, high five. And then Austin turns on Kenny as well. Low blow number two, brain buster, last chancery. And I really liked Ian and Colt at the end here. They weren't just like, oh, this guy's like an a-hole. They were incensed. They were like, they were at the top of their voices. They're always standing, but they were standing and shouting about, like, he's disgusting, he's a despicable person, this is like, this is one of your good friends, and you're going to do this to him. So I really like that. I love when, you know, the commentators, who are supposed to be impartial, more or less, are disgusted when somebody does something truly heinous and villainous.
Yeah, I think it goes a long way in moving the story where they want it to go. Their reactions tell the crowd a lot about, you know, where we're supposed to see each of the characters, each of the wrestlers in this particular story. And I think that there's, if you really want to go into a deep reading, because I was thinking about, like I said, I felt like we had to talk about this ending before we could really talk about, like, why make the decision to have Kenny interfere in a way that isn't really befitting of a babyface. And I think that you could do an interesting reading on this, and this is probably just me, like, over reading stuff, but you could do a really interesting reading where it's like Kenny compromises a bit of his, you know, his wrestling, like, morality, right? He compromises some respectability in the ring to intervene on behalf of a person that he cares about, and only to have that same person turn on him. And for that, like, action, that, like, immoral action that he would, you know, succumb to be for naught, like, to have not the outcome that was desired, to not even, like, do anything for the person that he cared about, but also have the same person, like, come at him and, you know, turn on him and, like, you know, treat him the same as the person that he was fighting in the match to begin with. So I think there's some, like, fun things you can play with there. I don't know if it's intentional or was really supposed to be read that way, but I think it's I think it's interesting that Kenny King steps out of the babyface role for a moment to like do something kind of underhanded and heelish, only to get a low blow from that same person he was defending.
So, Aries and King at Best in the World?
Three-way.
With Silas for the title?
Yes. Would be weird, right? Because there's already a three-way match.
Yeah, see, I don't... I guess there is no other logical opponent for Silas Young at this point. He doesn't have anybody who's set up to kind of be his next challenger. Although, actually, that could change on June 16th in Dallas, Texas. So we'll get to that in a little bit. I kind of assume just Aries and King in a grudge match, if we see Aries again. I also thought there's a good chance that we won't see Austin again, and this will just be him leaving because he's so busy with Impact and everything else.
Why do a dusty finish of this sort and not continue to use that person or to have a longer game intended? I feel like that there's just too much set up there for Austin not to like at least have another appearance to conclude it. I feel like Best in the World is a good chance for that to happen because it's a pay-per-view, it's a big event. They can culminate the storyline in some kind of moderately satisfying way, and then Austin can go back to the Impact and it doesn't have to continue from there. But why do it this way only to like just leave it? I wouldn't as a viewer appreciate that. I can understand if like contractual obligations don't allow him to do more than what he's already done, but I would think that's kind of short-sighted.
Yeah, I understand the DQ finish with when you have champion versus champion from different promotions. But yeah, I suppose it wouldn't make sense for him to have even to beat down Kenny King and all that if he wasn't going to come back. Otherwise, they could have ended the show with him and Kenny both in the ring looking ticked off that Silas retained the title and just end it there. And then that's goodbye to Austin.
They will hopefully make good on this because there's some compelling stuff that could happen, especially if it does just end up being a Austin Aries Kenny King match at Best in the World. I will be fine with a good grudge match between the two of them. I'd like to see that compliment because Austin Aries has similar styles to Young, and I always like the matches between Silas and Kenny, so I feel like a match between Austin and Kenny will be pretty riveting, especially if they can carry this energy over. To not do that would just be kind of a waste.
Well, I think last thing about this match worth discussing is what do you make of Todd Sinclair being the one in charge here? Sinclair is the one to come out from the back and overturn the decision and restore, I don't know if it's justice, because Silas doesn't deserve to still be the champion after all, after everything that happened, but he enforced the rules at the very least. And Ian Riccoboni was quick to point that out, like Sinclair is out here because Bully Ray was fired as enforcer. We don't have anybody to enforce the rules. We don't have an authority figure around. Joe Koff shows up occasionally, but he's not a regular figure. So it's Sinclair. I mean, we've talked about this every week, and I think we're going to keep talking about it until something's resolved. But is this a permanent thing? Are they just going to have the referees be the ones to enforce decisions going forward, Todd Sinclair or whomever? Or is this still just biding time until we introduce the new permanent enforcer?
Probably biding time. I feel like now, since they've introduced an enforcer role, it makes sense to fill it eventually. There's just not been a person to step into that role fairly neatly. But, congratulations to Todd Sinclair for his promotion, I guess.
Yeah, you better get a pay raise after getting kicked in the between the legs. So here's another thing, briefly. A couple weeks ago, Shane Taylor beat up a referee and a couple security guards. And Ian Riccoboni said, oh, there's going to be a fine for that, probably some suspensions. So in that sense, I guess they have an out. If Austin Aries, due to Impact contractual agreements, can't make another ROH appearance, they could blame it on that, right? After his actions, ROH has no interest in working with Austin Aries again. He's not welcome back here. End of story.
Yeah.
That's their parachute if they need it.
Yeah, that's a decent avenue to take.
All right. So we also had another match on the show. This is very unusual, I will say. A week of ROH television with only two matches.
Yeah.
It's almost always three, sometimes four, depending on the format.
Yeah, I was really curious how, because when the show started, because the show starts with Cody at Cody's entrance, I was like, a Cody match at the beginning? That's interesting. And of course, you know, we'll talk about what that actually was. But yeah, so our only other match of this week was Karen Q versus Tennille Dashwood.
Which again, steps forward for Women of Honor for sure, right? Like half the matches on this episode were women.
Yeah, and it's the second straight week.
And next week we're getting Kelly Klein and Deonna Purrazzo. So huge. They definitely, I don't know if they're going all in, but they're definitely making a much stronger commitment to the women's division than they ever have before. Ever.
So good to see.
In the 16 years of the company.
It's so good to see.
And I got to imagine it's largely based on response, right? The live crowds have been a little flat for some of these. I remember when they did the UK tour, I thought like, wow, you could hear a pin drop during some of those women's matches. But I feel like on social media, I'm seeing a lot of people really getting behind them. And, you know, say what you will about WWE, but they've been getting behind their women as well. They've been putting them in prominent roles. Not equal to the men, but prominent, more so than a lot of other sports, a lot of other companies or television shows.
Sure. And to see women's wrestling on television, WWE is providing the most of it, because to see women's wrestling in any kind of continuous fashion usually requires you to subscribe to a like Women's Bet Online or to, you know, follow stuff online. So as far as like TV broadcasts go, WWE is providing more of that than anybody else. They just simply have more properties to do so. And they are giving attention to their women's talent. I don't want to be completely cynical and overly critical, but I tend to dislike the way they use a lot of the women that they have in all of these amazingly talented women's wrestlers that they have. But there's no doubt that they're being used in storylines. They are. They're being used. They're given matches. I think that, you know, they could always be given longer matches, more matches, better match, better stories, actually using them well. But, you know, it's still undeniable that like their women's talent has a presence in WWE. It's a very like formidable presence.
I always draw comparisons between ROH and NXT simply because they're both 1 hour shows, weekly television in, you know, American based. So there's a lot more comparisons between those two shows, I feel like, than Impact, which is 2 hours, or SmackDown or Raw or the women's only promotions. And yeah, NXT almost without fail every week has at least one match or segment with the women, one with their tag division, one with their men's singles division to further feuds. And so I feel like ROH is getting to that point now too, where we didn't have any tag teams on this episode, but we had women profiled. We had one of the men's titles profiled. So that's something.
Yeah.
And this match, Tennille and Karen Q, this was the first women's match in ROH to go longer than 10 minutes since Kelly Klein versus Mandy Leon on March 24th television.
Wow. Yeah, it was a fairly long match. What was the actual length?
They went like 10:38 or something by my count. So just over 10 minutes. But I remember noticing, you know, every title defense Sumi Sakai has had, even these on these live events where you think they could go longer, they've had women's tag matches, six-man tags, they're all 7 minutes, maybe 8 minutes, if that.
Yeah.
So when I hit the stop on my stopwatch at the end and I noticed it was past 10 minutes, I was like, wow, that's interesting. I had to go back and look it up. And sure enough, it was 2.5 months ago, Mandy and Kelly in the Women of Honor tournament. That was the last time a match went this long.
Yeah. I don't know the exact length of it, but my favorite Women of Honor match, and probably this is an obvious choice, but my favorite Women of Honor match was last year's no DQ match between between Karen Q and Deonna Purrazzo. And I believe that match is over 10 minutes long.
Okay. But yeah, that would have been a while ago.
It would have been a while ago. Yeah.
Yeah.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
This was Karen Q's return to television. We hadn't seen her last time we saw Karen. We've only seen her once this year prior to this. And the last time was she lost to Brandi Rhodes in the Women of Honor tournament. I want to say that was like maybe February or March.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen her since. And she's definitely a heel.
Yes.
She tore up the streamers. She yelled at the fans, don't throw streamers in this ring. After she lost, she picked up a steel chair and she was hitting it on the ring post and the apron. She was not happy about losing. There was even a moment when she tried to pin Tennille. Tennille kicked out and Karen got so upset she was yelling in Mandarin.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, what heels are there in the Women of Honor division right now?
No one as good as Karen Q.
There's her. There's Kelly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe Jenny Rose, depending on the week, it seems.
Yeah, Jenny Rose isn't so much a heel. She's kind of playing the... It's hard to say because when you go up against the title holder and you have to build that story, you have to play the antagonist. So it's hard to say if Jenny is like going to be characterized as a heel from here on in, you know, having just not gotten the title from Sumi. It's possible. She could be a decent heel, I think. But as far as heels go in Women of Honor, I'm a mark for Karen. I love what Karen does as a heel. I think she's a great heel. I think she wrestles like a heel. I think she does a really good job with smack talk. She has that edge where Kelly Klein is great at being this like bruising, like intimidating force. Very good at being menacing, but again, just not really good at the talking part of it. And Karen's got it all down. Like, she's got the heel actions in and out of the ring.
Yeah, this was, I didn't love this match. I thought it was okay. I'd like to see more of Karen, and with Deonna gone, I think we probably will. That was my takeaway from the ending here, was Tennille pinned her, but it was, again, one of these... It wasn't a roll-up, but it was essentially a roll-up. It was another one of these, like, fluke pins where Karen's dominating this Neil does. Oh, hooked your leg all of a sudden out of nowhere, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, she went for her variation of the Boston Crab. Like, it was the second time she was doing it. And there was a really... It was supposed to be a reversal, but it was not well executed. It was pretty sloppy and with Tennille getting the pin from that. Otherwise... I just continue to be a little underwhelmed with Tennille Dashwood. I felt like Karen was operating at a higher level.
Yeah, see, I was a huge fan of Tennille in NXT, a decent fan on the main roster of WWE. She hasn't had any standout matches in ROH yet. But I still want to defend her and say, I don't know if she's been put in the position to. Like, they knew this wasn't the main event of the show. This wasn't for the title. So I don't think they were going out there to blow people away, either of them.
I can remember more of what Karen was doing than I can remember what Tennille was doing. And it's not just because I have a bias for Karen or because I'm a fan of her work. I think in ring, she was doing more and being more present and giving more than Tennille has been giving. I think that you get some of the same moveset from Tennille. And when she dominates at the top of this match, she's doing it with like nothing really flashy, nothing really memorable, just, you know, some of your basic strikes and blows. Whereas once Karen gets going, you've got just this brawling, like raw energy that comes from her. And I'm not feeling any energy from Tennille, even when she does some of her bigger moves, like the tarantula on the ropes. Like, I want to feel more from that, and I'm just not getting it. I believe Tennille is capable of it, but I'm not seeing it. It hasn't been delivered yet. And if you're going to get a standout match against somebody, especially someone who is really good at playing the heel archetype, if you are going to get a good, like a good face match from that, that Karen's a great person to work with. I feel like I was seeing really great things from other competitors matched up against Karen in previous matches. So I'm wondering, like, what is it about Tennille that is just still not clicking?
I wonder if she's miscast at the moment, because her character, she's another one of these, like, her character should be a heel.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's all about me, spotlight on me, she wears the sunglasses. It's literally her look and her catchphrases and everything are all exactly the same as the heel she was playing in NXT. And that heel was terrific. She wore this single glove, she wore the cop sunglasses, and she came out and she was just like belittling everybody, and all the attention should be on me. I'm the real star here. And it was great. She was like pretty over as a heel. And now she's in ROH and fans are cheering her because they're happy that she's here and they're happy to see her in the same way they cheer Cody. But she's still, all her mannerisms and all her whatever are still a villain. I don't know. Maybe that's causing a bit of a disconnect where it's kind of, I don't know why we should be cheering her other than, hey, we're grateful to see you.
Well, she's definitely being set up as a face. Like, that seems clear. She's definitely being set up as a face in ROH or in Women of Honor. And in this match in particular, like, she's just not, she's not the heel in this match, certainly. But I don't think she's ever really being given the chance to play the heel in Women of Honor since she's entered. So, I mean, that could be it. Maybe it's just simply that, like, the character that she's coming in with doesn't fit the role that they put her in.
Yeah, I want to say, and she hasn't had, like, a feud yet. You know, she's had a kind of a rivalry with Kelly Klein to an extent, but not, like, a real feud with back-and-forth promos and, you know, even something as short as Jenny and Sumi. So I really just want to see them take that next step. She's racked up a lot of wins so far. She's got, like, she's 4-1 in singles matches, I think, at the moment. So, you know, an 800 record, probably the best in the division behind Sumi. So I want to hope that this is leading to something, that they're building her up and maybe she turns heel and feuds with Sumi. But I want to see her put in, like, a prominent match, a prominent feud on a big pay-per-view and be given, like, 15 minutes and really see what happens then.
Yeah. I would like to see that fairly soon too, because I just feel like every time I watch Tennille, I'm like waiting for that to connect and it's just not happening. And I've been sold on her reputation. I've been sold on like some of the promise that I've seen, but it's just fading. Like I'm just not excited by the prospect of her matches in the way that I'm excited by seeing other Women of Honor talent. Like at this point, I'm more excited to see what they're going to do with Jenny Rose next than what happens with Tennille Dashwood.
Yeah, I can see that. I still, if I had to make predictions, I'm thinking Kelly Klein is the next in line to challenge Sumi for the title, and then Kelly will eventually win the title and defend it against Tennille, just because it seems like those three have been kind of positioned as a step higher than everybody else. But I don't know, things change all the time in ROH for sure, as we discussed with Deonna all of a sudden signing with NXT.
Yeah, so
who knows, maybe somebody new will come in next week and totally shake things up.
Yeah, with that gap, who knows? They could have been setting it up so that Deonna was going to take on some like real prominent role in the like fight for the title, but that's going to have to change now. So that could end up with a lot of shifting in a really positive way. Maybe this will be what is needed to, you know, get Tennille where we need her to be to like become a more compelling presence in the ring, because it's not happening right now. It's not for lack of talent. She clearly is super talented. It's not for lack of presence, but whatever is not clicking, maybe it's a lack of storyline. Maybe it's the fact that she's in a role that doesn't suit what she came in with. There's many different ways that this can be fixed. It just needs to get fixed.
All right. So two other short little things on the show this week. I'll get to the weird one first. Throughout the night, Ian and Colt said that Jay Lethal has a huge announcement regarding Best in the World. It's coming up later on in the show. Tonight, Jay Lethal, huge announcement. Up until during Silas and Austin, they mentioned Jay Lethal still has a huge announcement about Best in the World that's coming up after this match. First, I thought that was weird. Like, you got Silas and Austin for the title, and they're not the main event. The main event, or they're not the final segment. The final segment is going to be Jay Lethal making an announcement. That seemed really weird. And sure enough, we didn't get it. We also didn't get an announcement about not getting it. The show closed with Austin throwing his temper tantrum, and we went off air, and that was it. No mention of Jay Lethal. So, I mean, we've done this. ROH does this occasionally. They've done this in the past, where they'll announce something, and then it doesn't happen that episode due to extenuating circumstances from something else. And I think that's what's happened here. I get the feeling next week we're going to hear Lethal make his announcement in the ring. And at that time, Ian Riccaboni will say, this was supposed to happen last week, but with everything that happened with the TV title match, we ran out of time. Sorry, folks. Because they've done that in the past. Ian's good about... They'll make small, subtle lines and mentions here and there to try to really sell us on the idea that this is live. I'm trying to think. I can't remember what match it was, but there was a recent title match. We were getting close to the end of the show, and Ian said, I'm getting word from backstage. If this match doesn't finish in the next 5 minutes, because we only have 5 minutes left on television, you'll be able to watch the remainder of the match on Honor Club. Stuff like that. I get the feeling that's what happened with Lethal here, is they knew, you know, when they scripted the show, they knew he wasn't going to make his announcement this week. And it would have been odd having him and the Cody Marty Skrull segment on the same episode. But I think it was just a concentrated effort on their part to, A, get us, like, intrigued about what's happening with Lethal, what's this announcement going to be, and B, sell the idea that the show is, like, unpredictable and wrestling is chaotic and you might schedule something and then run out of time because a match goes longer than you expected.
Yeah, I'm just very curious what is going to happen now. And I'm curious how this went down when it happened in Chicago when they taped it. Just having, you know, been through the TV taping now, I'm just kind of curious how that was. I wonder if the payoff ends up being something that they, you know, taped in the next segment, in the next episode at that taping. It's very curious.
Yeah, I'm sure the live crowd didn't know anything about any sort of Lethal promo. When he comes out next week, that'll be, hey, it's Jay Lethal, news to them, sort of.
Yeah, exactly, because you're not hearing the commentary. When you're watching the taping.
As to the nature of this huge announcement, part of me thinks it's hyperbole, and it's not going to be that huge of an announcement. It's just going to be an announcement about whatever his match is at Best in the World. That said, I don't know, any ideas?
No, I figured it was Best in the World related.
They said that it is, but I don't know. Who do you see him facing at Best in the World?
I have no clue.
So, well, he's currently on this road to redemption, right? He's trying to beat the people who beat him in recent history. Currently, I went back 12 months, and at this time, the only people left unavenged right now are Chucky T, who I believe he's facing on television sometime in the next couple of weeks, next month, Dalton Castle, Silas Young, and Bobby Fish. Probably going to have to leave that Bobby Fish one unfinished because I don't think Lethal's showing up at the next takeover to challenge him.
Darn.
So that leaves Dalton and Silas. I don't know. I mean, do they do Lethal and Silas for the TV title? And Kenny and Austin instead? Or, I don't know, whenever they say huge announcements, I get the feeling it's just going to be Lethal against somebody from New Japan.
Yeah.
Lethal and Naito for the Intercontinental title, and we know there's no way in hell Lethal wins.
Well, yeah, because, you know, Naito won't have it anymore, because Jericho will win it.
Yeah. Now, Lethal versus Jericho for the New Japan Intercontinental title, that would be arguably a huge announcement.
That would be really big announcement. But Obviously, it's...
But
I don't think it's happening. It could be that he's going to go up for the TV title against Silas. That might be what ends up being the big news.
Yeah, because otherwise I get the feeling it's going to be... at the last, on the UK tour, they confirmed that Kushida is returning to ROH for Best of the World. And they mentioned that Kushida has a pinfall over Jay Lethal. But I looked it up, and that was like 14 months ago. I mean, Jay, if you're still hung up that some guy beat you in a wrestling match 14 months ago, come on, like, get over it. It happens. You know? Like, worry about the more recent losses than something that long ago.
That seems like a likely contender, though, for the match for Lethal. 14 months is not super recent, but it's not that long ago. So maybe that would take a... he would take a detour on his redemption tour to, like... get a old grudge to redeem an old grudge, and a lethal Kushida match would be I think compelling to watch on a pay-per-view, definitely a pay-per-view level match if done appropriately. I can't decide what I find more promising, that or a Silas match. I honestly think I'd prefer a Kushida match, is as low stakes as it would inevitably be.
Yeah, and this seems to be the formula for Lethal kind of recently, right? We had like was it Supercard of Honor, maybe?
Yeah.
I can't remember what show it was, but it was like, well, what are they going to do with Jay Lethal? And, oh, him and Tanahashi are going to team up against the Briscoes. It's like, oh, we don't know what to do with Lethal this month, so we'll just pair him up with the New Japan guy.
Yeah, I would really like it if they didn't use him in a tag. If they gave him a solo match.
Yeah, I'm confident it will be a singles match. It's probably Kushida, but I don't think that's huge. So we'll we'll debate the definition of the word huge next week on Talking On. One other segment on the show, it opened the show, which again, kind of unusual, a little bit of a break from the formula that ROH almost always opens with a wrestling match, closes with a match. So opening with a in-ring segment was a little bit of a change of pace. Cody and Bernard the Business Bear come out. Cody acknowledges that it's a triple threat at Best in the World. Cody, Marty Scurll, Dalton Castle for the world title. Cody's going to win the ROH world title. He's going to win the NWA world title from Nick Aldis at All In. He's going to be elected the next senator of Texas, as you can see on Being the Elite. He is still the leader of Bullet Club, which anytime he brings that up, I'm just like, that storyline isn't even...
Yeah.
I'm so annoyed at that storyline not being resolved and just, like, dangling in the air. So Cody says all this stuff. He makes all these promises. Marty Scurll comes out. Scurll says, essentially, we're buddies, but if I have to go through you to win my first world title, I will. They shake hands. Cody Skrull teases that he's going to break Cody's fingers, but instead he just pats him on the hand and walks away.
Yeah, he gives him like a low five, like basically.
Yes, the lowest of fives. I don't know. What did you think of this whole segment?
Well, we got a lot of like really overt messaging in this, where you know they've been overt about it enough, as you know wrestling will be. But they were resting on more like implication rather than explicit mention. So in this particular promo and this particular interaction in the ring, there was a lot of just like outward explicit stuff, like Cody referring to Marty as his Bullet Club subordinate, which I thought was a really a strong call out. And you know, Marty coming out and telling him that, like, and reaffirming that, you know, Cody is really big about telling everyone how great he is and everyone just knows how great Marty is. And I thought that was a nice sly nod to the fact that Skrull is so over and amongst the Ring of Honor crowds. Like, Cody's over, but nobody pops like Skrull. I mean, his entrance in Chicago, that was a huge, huge pop just for him entering. It wasn't even his big entrance. It wasn't even his like villain entrance. It was just him coming out and people were static. The handshake, the mind games, you know, it was all fairly apace, like, you know, pretty civil considering, but I thought it was it was setting up everything we already know, but doing it more in an explicit fashion, which we hadn't seen yet.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it too every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
Yeah, see, I just felt like it wasn't furthered enough. Mm-hmm. I came away from the segment thinking, okay, like, there's tension between the two of them. They're going to be in a triple threat match with Dalton. I already know all this. Like, I already got this sense from that very first backstage promo they did three, four weeks ago, where they're bickering about who was going to be challenging for the title in a singles match. I wanted more furthered by this segment. I didn't want them coming to blows or attacking each other. I don't think that's going to happen because they're both Bullet Club, and Bullet Club can't separate. These five guys are tied to each other forever because none of them are going to leave being the Elite.
Honestly,
the whole Cody versus Kenny battle for leadership of Bullet Club has kind of soured me on all of these Bullet Club storylines in wrestling. I still love being the Elite, but these stories on these shows, I'm like, Cody and Marty aren't going to like turn on each other and like have this vicious like blood feud because, you know, Cody and Kenny turned on each other and had this big feud, and they're both still Bullet Club, and neither of them, you know, they're both still leaders, and like nothing was resolved.
You run into trouble about what it is to be a member of Bullet Club, what it means, what the stakes are, as far as like if you have problems with people in Bullet Club and you're a Bullet Club member, does that mean that you're no longer a Bullet Club? Does it mean that you are kicked out? Does it mean that like you have to join, like you join another faction? Or I think the issue is that like without resolution with the Cody and Kenny storyline, without, you know, building more rivalries within the Bullet Club family, like that ends up lowering the stakes in a way, because we don't, there's not really any ramifications. Like Kenny's still around. Technically Kenny's still a member of Bullet Club. Kenny kind of isn't actively a Bullet Club member right now because he's just actively doing other Kenny Omega things. It's not, he hasn't like been formally kicked out of Bullet Club, and there's not really any like sign that anyone else would be either. It's just this weird situation where you can have these rivalries and build these stories, and it's a weird deflation of expectations because there's no like real consequences for loss here. You know, if Cody and Marty were to get into a match together, like, and one wins and one doesn't, both of them are still Bullet Club members. Both of them are still, you know, being the Elite. Like that has to be resolved. Their continued presence has to be resolved, even while they're supposed to be like, you know, having this intense fight. So it's a problem. I'm with you, actually. I'm with you about kind of just general Bullet Club fatigue in ROH. I was talking to other people on Twitter,
This is what brought it up for me.
Yeah.
Actually, I saw you and my former Talking Honor co-host, Lola Bradbury, talking on Twitter about like, oh, it's like, it's not ROH anymore. It's Bullet Club featuring members of the ROH roster.
Yeah. Yeah, and shout out to Lola for making the comments that she did, because I had been feeling that way and just not really like putting words to it. But I get frustrated by how Bullet Club dominates. Like, they're always the main event. Like, when they have matches, they dominate the time. I mean, this is an episode where we had two matches, fairly good matches, but we had two matches, and we had a however long segment, a 5-minute segment or whatever, in ring with Cody and Marty just like doing the same stuff that they've been doing. And we could have had like a 6 or 7 minute match in that.
Well, and it's just okay, here's an example off the top of my head. It's a triple threat match in the main event of Best in the World, Baltimore, Maryland, June 29th. But there are only two guys in this segment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? Where's our world champion? Why isn't Dalton Castle out there confronting both of them and saying, I don't care if you two have issues with each other. I'm the champion. I'm going to stay the champion. I don't care about your little civil war, your drama, or whatever. It was so, like, the fact that the world champion wasn't involved in this at all. I'm sure he will be next week or the week after. He'll have some sort of rebuttal. But that just feels like it says a lot.
Yeah. Their champion, their title holder, is being sidelined.
Supposedly the number one guy in the
company. Yes, being sidelined in favor of continued attention to the two guys who are fighting over his title.
The two guys who don't need more screen time. Because the fans already love and worship Cody and Marty. They don't need more time to, you know, talk and get over with the crowds.
No. They really don't. They don't need more time to build this rivalry. They've had their promos. People understand. There's a three-way match because of it. Like, it changed the match because of the story. Like, the storyline had that effect. Like, we get it. We would like other people to have the time here. We would like the title holder to have the time, especially when Dalton is as good at promos as he is.
Yeah, and so maybe next week, the week after, we get what? Cody and Marty against the boys in a tag match, and there's dissension between Cody and Marty, and then Dalton gets like a 30-second backstage promo where he talks about how, you know, he's going to win, and we go into this match knowing no way Dalton wins. He loses, he disappears, and it becomes Cody and Marty feuding for the title or something. That's what it feels like at this point. And Dalton deserves better than that.
Yes. Yes.
Even if he is injured and banged up at the moment, and maybe that's part of the reason. I mean, he wrestled on the UK tour, so he's not in a hospital bed somewhere.
Yeah, I know that he didn't wrestle at the most recent show in New York. He was supposed to wrestle the New York City show this Saturday, and he wasn't able to. So it might be that his injuries are still preventing him from being able to continuously do matches, but there's no reason that he's not a part of a promo.
Yeah, all the more reason he should be doing more promos if he can't.
Yes. Yes.
On the Bullet Club is ROH topic. Best in the World is our next big pay-per-view, June 29th. We have three matches announced now. Bullet Club members Cody and Marty versus Dalton Castle. Bullet Club members the Young Bucks versus the Briscoes for the tag titles. Mm-hmm. And Bullet Club member Adam Page versus Punishment Martinez. That's it. First three matches announced, all five Bullet Club members. Again, yeah, probably just a coincidence, right?
Sure. Yeah.
There's a reason, you know. Paige and Martinez, not for anything, but that match is announced before the TV title, before the Women of Honor title, before Jay Lethal's huge announcements. I don't know. I guess Lethal's announcement would probably be match number four, because Lethal might be the number six guy after the Bullet Club guy, the Bullet Club game.
Yeah.
On the ROH hierarchy.
I mean, Lethal is your brand. If you don't effectively take care of Lethal, you are like disowning your Ring of Honor brand. Lethal is Ring of Honor.
So yeah, Best in the World. We've got before Best in the World, we've got two matches in Texas, June 15th in San Antonio, June 16th in Dallas. They're being called, the show's title is ROH State of the Art. We'll discuss I think we'll go through the card more next week. A couple of matches announced. Killer Elite Squad are going to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So our team CMLL, which in this case is Atlantis, Guerrero Maya Jr. and Stuka Jr., they're going to be in six-man action against SoCal Uncensored one night, The Kingdom another night. Jonathan Gresham finally returns from obscurity again to face Cody. Thunder Rosa, are you familiar with
her? I am not.
Neither am I, but she is teaming with Kelly Klein against Sumi and Tennille on night one. And then facing Tennille in singles action on night two. So we'll have to research Thunder Rosa before next week's
podcast. Yeah, I'm very excited. Looks good, so I'm interested.
And then the big one, I kind of alluded to this earlier regarding Silas Young, the TV title. Night two in Dallas, they're calling it Proving Ground and Instant Reward. And I'm going to explain this now before people start going on Twitter and saying, I don't understand these matches, they're too confusing, I don't know the rules. It's a six-man match. Silas Young, Adam Page, Punishment Martinez, Jonathan Gresham, Scorpio Sky, and Cheeseburger. All six guys in the ring at the same time, or, you know, being flipped on over the ropes on the floor, as is the case in matches. Mm-hmm. All six guys. If Silas Young pins any of the other five, they never get another title shot so long as he's champion. If any of the other five pin Silas, they instantly get a singles match for the TV title. So say Paige and Martinez take each other out at ringside, and Jonathan Gresham manages to get a quick roll up on Silas. Ding, ding, ding. Jonathan Gresham is your winner. They immediately send Paige, Martinez, Sky, and Cheeseburger to the back. Gresham and Young go to their opposite corners. Ring the bell. It's a TV title match.
Wow.
Wow.
So, yeah, possibilities that I'm thinking Silas walks out of Dallas, still the champion, but maybe this would set up something, you know, maybe this is a chance to really elevate someone like Jonathan Gresham. Give him like a surprise win in this match, and then Silas takes the cheap DQ in the second, and we get a rematch at Best in the World or something.
Yeah, what do you think? Who do you think is going to be that guy? Because I'm going to say right now, Adam Page and Punishment Martinez are probably going to take each other out.
For sure. And Scorpio Sky currently has the worst singles record in 2018 of anyone in ROH.
Hmm.
So probably not him. If anything, he might take the fall. But, oh, wait. Yeah, okay, so I don't know how that works. Here I go. Apologies. I gave a little preface about how if you don't understand the rules, you're just not paying attention. You're an idiot, essentially. That was my coded talk there. And now I myself, admittedly, I don't know what happens if Gresham pins Scorpio. I don't know if that means he gets a title shot at Silas or not, or if he just wins this match. I'll have to look that up. Because otherwise... Yeah. Otherwise, I'd go with that. I'd go with Gresham makes Scorpio tap out to the Octopus and earns a title shot. If that's an option. I don't know if it is.
Yeah, because the way you explained it, they have to pin Silas, right?
That's what the two paragraphs on their website say. I don't know. You keep talking and I'll look it up.
So it's possible.
It's possible
that... we have to look at what happens if that pin happens. But if my guess is that they have to pin Silas. So Jonathan Gresham pinning Scorpio Sky is a waste of time. So
if any man in the match pins the world television champion Silas Young, they will receive an instant reward. A title match on the spot against you.
Okay, so we won't have.
Should Young pin any of the other competitors, they cannot. Not even when Silas is champion, they can't challenge for the TV title for a year.
Whoa!
If he pins anybody else.
Well, then that's not gonna happen.
So you think somebody's pinning Silas? Then?
I think someone's gonna pin Silas.
Yeah, because it doesn't make any sense for Martinez to pin Paige, or for Scorpio to pin Cheeseburger. They win the match, but they don't get a title shot.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be trying. Okay, and then that protects Silas, right? If all five guys are trying to pin him and not pin each other, and then he does get pinned, it protects him, right? It's basically a handicap match at that point.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to watch, but it's one of those matches where, like, ultimately, it's exactly... It's going to come out exactly as you think it's going to come out.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Gresham. That's my pick to win.
Just because I
want to see them do more with
Gresham. Me too. And I actually think this is a really good chance to do that with Gresham. My second pick would be Scorpio Sky because he doesn't have a great record. So, like, this might be a way of, like, trying to put him over a little bit.
ROHWrestling.com is quick to point out that the last time they did one of these matches, Cheeseburger won. So he's arguably the favorite going in.
Okay. Yeah, okay. But I think that only makes the point that someone who has a fairly poor record can win this, or can, you know, get that instant reward by challenge. So like Scorpio could get it.
But are you gonna do Scorpio versus Silas? Heel versus heel. I don't know.
It's one of those things where it's more about it being fun to watch than having any like real stakes.
Yes. Well, everything is bigger in Texas, they say.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
That's the point of this match.
It's good because Texas needs to be big enough to hold Killer Elite Squad. I am super excited to see Briscoe's versus Killer Elite Squad. They better...
For the tag titles.
What was that?
What was that?
For the tag titles.
Yes, for the tag titles, yes, which, you know, probably will be staying with the Briscoes, but make sure they have plenty of bottled water handy for Lance Archer.
Vance Archer?
Lance Archer. Oh, okay. Lance Are you familiar with Killer Elite Squad?
I am. I think Vance Archer was his name in WWE.
Okay.
If I recall. Okay. Or it was Lance Hoyt.
Lance Hoyt, I think. Yeah, so he's Lance Archer in Killer Elite Squad. And I don't know if he was doing this when he was not in New Japan, but he likes to come out with a big entrance of several water bottles tucked all over his person. And just shower the audience in sprays from the water bottles. I mean, he goes through like maybe 10 or 11 in a single entrance, and you don't even know where he's pulling them from. They just come from somewhere on his person. And he's a huge, huge man.
All right. Well, that's I'm sold. That's all.
There you go.
Book it.
He'll be hydrating Texas better than Texas hydrates itself.
Okay. Next week on television, Deonna Purrazzo, Kelly Klein in the big blow-off to their feud. It has to be the blow-off because it might be Deonna's last match. I don't know. We'll try to get some sort of that's our goal for next week's podcast. Find out whether or not this really is Deonna's last match or whether she's got any more appearances queued up.
Yeah.
Because that's noteworthy if it is.
Yeah, that's for sure. Again, it's like you have to ask a question, like what happens with All In? What happens with all the things that she's probably already been booked for? So it's possible that she'll be able to run out those bookings before they start using her.
Possibly. If Kelly beats her next week, Kelly should be All In. That seems.
Oh my gosh, maybe they can.
She takes her spot.
Yeah, I mean, this has happened before. This has already been recorded, but like maybe they can. Depending on if there's a rematch, if they can make one more rematch, they can make the rules like Kelly Klein gets her spot.
Yeah, loser has to go to NXT.
Oh, how terrible.
So that's next week. Also, presumably, some sort of announcement from Jay Lethal regarding Best in the World.
Yes, presumably. Yes. Who knows? It might have already happened. Maybe it's already up on ROH.com.
Perhaps. And there'll be more info about San Antonio and Dallas. We'll have more discussions about those matches. So thank you for listening, folks. As always, you can reach us, talkinghonor@gmail.com. Send us your thoughts on who's going to win the Proving Ground Instant Reward match, who Jay Lethal is going to face at Best in the World. If there's any way that ROH can, you know, make somebody a star other than the Bullet Club members. Things like that. Or, hey, who should... If ROH can go ahead and hire somebody to replace Deonna Purrazzo, who should it be? That's a good question.
Great question.
Scour the Indies. Who would you...
Yes, if you could take one or two women's talents from another indie, who would that be? And tell us all about it. Because I'm actually always curious about the women's wrestling. It's stateside that I don't know, or the non-Japanese women's wrestlers that I don't know. So please let us know about your recommendations of who ROH should scoop up in NXT fashion.
Please write to us, talkinghonor@gmail.com. You can find me on Twitter at Talking Honor.
You can find me on Twitter at Forked PGH. That's F-O-R-K-E-D PGH.
And if you haven't heard, we got a little spinoff show now. It's called Elite Repeat. It's a podcast available to PW Torch VIP subscribers. Every week, myself, Emily, and wrestler in training, Tempest, out of the Gangrel Asylum in Port St. Lucie, Florida. The three of us get together and we're rewatching Being the Elite from the beginning. This week's episode will be up, I want to say, maybe Friday. A little bit of a delay this week due to technical issues, but it'll be up at some point this week. We'll be looking at a couple more episodes of Being the Elite, and we'll also be going in-depth on the history of Kenny Omega. So if you've heard of him, we're going to talk about
it. Yeah, well timed too, because that might come out Friday, and Van Domain is on Saturday, so it's a good time to do a little extra Kenny hyping.
There you go. You can listen to our podcast as a little, not a video package, an audio package. Prior to the match.
Yes, and just to give a shout out, I will also be appearing on the Pro Wrestling Torch Lioncast, a a podcast dedicated to New Japan Pro Wrestling. I'll be appearing on that later this week for their Dominion preview show because I've got a little outstanding bet with Lioncast host Ursa regarding the outcome of the Okada Omega match. So be sure to tune into that as well if you are a VIP member of PW Torch.
There you go. So thanks so much for listening, guys and girls and genderless people. We will talk to you again next week. Talk at you again next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership, and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip. And you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Life.